Okay, good morning, everybody. Well, welcome to our fourth annual conference on the 25th of December, Jews for Judaism and Torah in Motion. I think probably the most burning question from a Jewish point of view in the last 200 years is our relationship to the world around us, all the changes and modernity. How do we react and interact with the non-Jewish world, which we are living in its midst? And I think I commented on the first year we had the program, the fact that we can have such a program is in itself an amazing thing. I think historically, the 25th of December was a very dangerous time if one was Jewish. And we know that there is a custom, some people unfortunately follow the custom the entire year, of not learning Torah on Christmas Eve, on the 24th of December at night. And one of the reasons given for such a strange custom is the fear that if you went out to learn in Beis Medrash, you could get attacked and killed on the way. So the fact that we can learn Torah in Canada so openly in a Christian country is in itself a mark of how much our world has changed, our attitudes towards Christianity has changed, and them towards us, which you're going to hear about for the rest of the day. So I think it's for those who aren't in Florida and the Caribbean, the Bahamas, wherever else everybody is, so we're here to learn. So you're welcome, and I hope you'll have an enjoyable and meaningful day. Our first speaker, Dr. Korn, Eugene Korn, lives in Teaneck and is an expert. All our speakers are experts in the field. Dr. Korn is the editor of the Eida Journal, which is a journal dealing with important issues on modern Jewish thought, modern Jewish Orthodox thought. He teaches in the Department of Jewish and Christian Studies at Seton Hall University, has published books on the area of Judaism and Christianity. He lectures on Jewish ethics, the relationship to Jews and ethics in the outside world and the inside world. And for many years served as the director of interfaith affairs for the ADL. Served for the ADL, has three children, three grandchildren who live in Israel, where this is much less of an issue. And without further ado, it's a pleasure to have Dr. Korn here.
No. I have two mics. Okay, it's on now. Thank you, Rabbi Kelman and Torah in Motion, for the invitation to come to Toronto. And I'm particularly gratified to be on the program with Dr. Berger. I don't know if Dr. Berger is here yet, but he's really one of the great authorities in the field, and I've learned much from him. My real zchus, Jay mentioned a couple things about me. My real zchus is my children and my grandchildren in Israel. And I'll point out that, in fact, in Israel, the problem might be worse, or the issue is even more important in Israel in some respects than it is here. This morning, I want to give you more or less a survey of halachic attitudes toward Christians and Christianity. And this afternoon I'll talk a bit more perhaps about the political conditions and the social conditions in our contemporary lives that would affect the dynamics between Jews and Christians and Judaism and Christianity. But fundamentally, we need to establish the halachic parameters as Orthodox Jews before we can have any serious, meaningful discussion on the issue. Now, as Jay said, one of the distinguishing characteristics of modern life for Jews is the inescapable reality of emancipation, social emancipation. Jews are inextricably enmeshed in nearly all aspects of Christian society. We have relations with Christians in nearly every possible capacity. Some Orthodox Jews prefer to segregate themselves and avoid all contact with Gentiles. Modern Orthodox Jews, however, generally have rejected isolation and are committed to participation in the mainstream of Western pluralistic societies, which are predominantly Christian. So developing a modern, authentic position on contemporary Christians and Christianity, I would say, remains one of the most important unmet challenges for Jews committed to post-emancipation openness. And as Orthodox Jews, this modern assessment must begin with examining the halakha on the issues, both for the limitations that the halakha imposes on us, as well as the possibilities that it can open up for us. And I would say the determination of the halakhic position that we choose to adopt, right, will very much determine our behavior toward Christians as well as our attitudes toward Christians and issues like doing business with Christians and issues like obligations to return lost articles to Christians and issues like friendship with Christians or at least warm relations with Christians, rescuing Christians from danger is a halakhic consideration. And tolerating Christians in our midst. I'll try to be more specific as we go on. Now, just let me point out that Jewish consideration of Christianity today is different from the issue that faced Jewish authorities around the time of Jesus and the early Christians who were Jews. This is because it was really Saul of Tarsus, who's known as Paul, right, who initiated the real theological break, not Jesus. It was only in the wake of Paul's leadership that the idea arose that our Brit, the Jewish Brit, was no longer valid because belief in Jesus replaced obeying the mitzvot as the way to reach God. Now, when this happened, with this development, right, Christian belief ceased being a tolerable deviance within the Jewish community and became an intolerable heresy. Bitter feuds broke out, and Jewish Christians were labeled minim, sectarians, sectarian apostates to be excluded from our community. At that point, the two communities, the Jewish community and the Christian community, parted ways, right, and developed independent calendars, sancta, traditions, and theologies. Now, ironically, Paul did something else that mitigated the strain between Judaism and Christianity. He exported Christianity to the Gentiles of the Roman Empire. And when he did so, he transformed Jewish-Christian conflict from an internal Jewish feud about heresy to an external one. Christianity ceased being a heretical strain of Judaism and became an independent religion for Gentiles. And for Judaism and the halakha, consideration of dealing with Gentile religions are different from the logic of confronting apikoursis or heresy. The conversion of Constantine and the Council of Nicaea in the 4th century formally established Christianity and its doctrine as independent from Judaism. And in some sense, it made it easier for Jews to reconsider Christianity. Right? Because after this break, the crucial Jewish question changed from how do we deal with heresy to how can Judaism regard Gentile Christians and their religion? Now let's start with some basics about Torah and Gentiles. Throughout the Chumash, Gentiles are depicted predominantly as wicked and idolatrous. Prime examples are, in Bereshit, you have the population of Sodom and Gomorrah. Right? For the most part, Avram Avinu and Yitzhak and Yaakov live in a ruthless, primitive universe filled with paganism, cruelty, and immorality. Right? The portrait of Gentiles is almost exclusively negative, of non-Jews, almost exclusively negative. In Shemot, in Exodus, right, who are the Gentiles? The Mitzrim. Polytheistic pagans who enslave others and have no regard for human life. In Vayikra, in Leviticus, Gentiles worship Moloch, a god that demands human sacrifice. Right? Moloch's pagan ritual dictates throwing infants into a blazing inferno to satisfy pagan godly desires. And in Devarim, who are the Goyim? The Shiva Amamim, the Canaanite nations that defile Eretz HaKodesh, defile the Holy Land with abominable religious practices, sexual and social traditions. Right? So I would say the Chumash, right, presents more or less a binary creation consisting of the Jewish people, right, that relates to the one true Borei Shemayim V'aretz, right, and that's contrasted with non-Jews who are mired in immorality, cults, and idolatry, and have no positive relationship to God. Right. Now, Chazal, during the time of the Talmud, had spiritually healthy instincts and seized upon one aspect in the Chumash that doesn't fit into this neat binary division. There's one Gentile in the Chumash who's portrayed positively, and that is the Ger. Right. The Torah repeatedly commands us to be careful to treat the Ger with fairness and sensitivity, because Jews were Gerim who experienced oppression in Egypt. Yeah. Now, the Bible portrays the Ger as more or less isolated individuals in society. But Chazal, in the Talmud, expanded this idea of the stranger and conceptualized it into a broad legal and moral category. In Talmudic law, the stranger became all Gentiles who accept basic values of morality. These are known as the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the six prohibitions against murder, theft, sexual immorality, idolatry, Eiver Min HaChai, eating the limb of a living animal, and blasphemy against the single God of the universe, as well as the positive mitzvah, right, to set up courts of law that justly enforce the six prohibitions. And all Gentiles who live under these basic laws of civilization, under the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach, are considered to be worthy Gentiles, known as B'nai Noach. The Talmudic tradition split the Gentile world, right, into subcategories, two subcategories. The immoral pagan, whose religion was illicit, right, and the positive Gentile, right, the Ben Noach, who's to be regarded positively and whom Jews are obligated to protect and sustain. So this revolutionized the Jewish worldview from a binary to a tripartite conceptualization of humanity. I would say, given the context of the subject matter, that Jews also have a Trinitarian notion. But our Trinitarian notion is not about God, but it's about humanity. You have Jews, you have Gentiles who regard it positively, i.e. B'nai Noach, and then you have Jews who are non-Jews who are regarded negatively, who are Ovdei Avodah Zarah, to use the terminology. Now, what this means is that Torah and Halakha has long subscribed to something known as a double covenant theory. Right? Jews have a covenant of 613 mitzvot, and Gentiles have a covenant of Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach. And each covenant is valid for its respective adherence. B'nai Noach are not expected to convert, right, to the Jewish covenant. They have an independent, authentic covenant and a valid way of life. Judaism teaches that God considers these Gentiles, their lifestyle, and their worship to be sacred. Right? B'nai Noach are accorded positive status in this worldview, even to the extent that Gentiles who faithfully keep the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach are regarded by God to be more beloved than Jews who violate the fundamentals of the Taryag Mitzvot of the Torah. And the Talmudic and medieval rabbis paid some Gentiles the ultimate theological compliment by teaching that Chassidei Umot HaOlam Yeshlam Chelek LeOlam Haba, right, that righteous Gentiles have a share in the world to come. Now, this is a point, right, that is extremely significant, and it represents an asymmetry with traditional Christianity. Right? Christianity taught, up until very recently, that there was no such thing as a double covenant theory. It taught extra ecclesiam nulla salus. If you're outside the church, if you didn't subscribe to Christian belief, right, there was no possibility of salvation. Right? That Christianity was the exclusive path to salvation, and those not subscribing to Christianity, believing in Christianity, had no valid relationship with God. Right? Hence, Christianity has historically been very keen on conversion, right? Because if you were outside the church, you had no chance to be redeemed or to be saved. Now, paradoxically, it was Judaism, right, that maintained this kind of Trinitarian worldview about humanity. So then the question is for us, is Christianity within the category of invalid worship, illicit invalid worship? Or is it an authentic, licit religion that teaches the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach? Right? Now, interestingly, the Talmudic rabbis don't discuss this question. Right? There's really only one explicit reference to the theological status of Gentile Christians in the Talmud. Right? And even in this instance, right, some rabbinic commentators dispute whether it refers to Christianity or a separate Persian cult. And we'll see that in a moment. But the theological status of Christianity was discussed in the Middle Ages, right, where there are two very well-known positions, and they're fundamentally opposed to each other. Right. One opinion is that of the Rambam, widely considered to be the greatest rabbinic thinker since Moshe Rabbeinu. Rambam lived in the 12th century in Muslim Spain and North Africa. Right? And according to the Rambam, Christianity constituted avodah zarah, right? Literally alien worship that often connoted idolatry. Right? Now, to modern people, this might sound a bit strange, right? But for Jews living in the Middle Ages, it was really quite logical. Christianity violated the second of the Aseret HaDibrot, right? The prohibition against making graven images of God. Moreover, Christians venerated saints and prayed to intermediaries such as Mary. Now, this is unknown in Jewish theology and practice. But for the Rambam, the deepest problem of Christianity were the doctrines of the Trinity and the Incarnation. Rambam insisted that monotheism must be absolutely pure, and that any understanding of God that denied the absolute unity of God violated God's essence. And as a student of Aristotle's metaphysics, Rambam maintained that to predicate any division of God, to say that God somehow can be divided up into parts, right, is to imply that God's physical, limited, and imperfect. In other words, it's not God at all. Right? Hence, Christianity, with its doctrine of the Trinity, right, was not worshiping the single God who created the universe, but some other foreign alien concept. And since one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach is the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, Rambam ruled that Christians were not B'nai Noach and that their religion was illicit. The other opinion was that of Rabbi Menachem HaMeiri, who lived in 13th and 14th century France. In his commentary on the Talmud, and primarily on Masechet Avodah Zarah, Meiri taught that Avodah Zarah, the halachic category of Avodah Zarah, was not primarily theological as it was for the Rambam, or philosophical as it was for the Rambam, right? And that the negation of God's absolute unity does not necessarily represent a God foreign to Judaism or constitute Avodah Zarah. Right? If seen from the perspective of the Bible, according to the Meiri, Avodah Zarah is cultic worship, right, whose primary character is the absence of moral demands upon its worshippers. Illicit religion, that is Avodah Zarah, is represented by those forms of worship or religions that do not impose, right, the prohibitions of murder, theft, sexual immorality, and cruelty upon its adherents. That is, do not insist that their adherents obey the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach. Right? So Meiri claimed that while the Trinitarian Christianity violates true monotheism, right, it does not constitute avodah zarah, since it believes in the one borei shamayim v'aretz. And it requires Christians to subscribe to the basic moral laws of civilization. That is the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach. Right? Christians participate in the covenant of Noach, and Christianity is an autonomously valid and legitimate religious form. Now, it's crucial to note here the impact of experience on Jewish law and theology. Rambam never had any positive first-hand experiences with Christians, right, to counteract his philosophical conclusions. He didn't live with Christians, and what he knew of Christianity came exclusively from books. Unlike the Rambam, Meiri lived in Christian society in France, in an era of relatively good Christian-Jewish relations, in the latter part of his life at least. He discussed religion with Christians and understood that they could be moral and religiously sophisticated people. It made no sense to the Meiri to put Christians in the same category as ancient idolaters. Life gave the Meiri what it never gave to the Rambam, namely the incentive to rule as a point of Jewish law that Christians did not practice idolatry or foreign worship, avodah zarah. Meiri understood the deep implications of this thesis and went as far as to include Christians in the biblical category of achicha, brotherhood. In doing so, Meiri, I would say, achieved a certain transformation of the whole idea of avodah zarah within Jewish law, one that has important implications for contemporary Jewish thinking about Christians and Christianity. So these are the two kind of polar opposite positions, the Rambam and the Meiri. And this is what most religious Jews, halachically oriented Jews, are aware of. Now, in point of fact, what I'm going to try to argue today, right, is that neither the position of the Rambam regarding Christianity, nor the exact view of the Meiri, represents normative Jewish law for us today, at least for Ashkenazim. Right? Rather, the Meiri and the Rambam's positions are extremes in a spectrum of rabbinic positions, halachic positions. The majority of the halachic positions lie somewhere between the Meiri and the Rambam in two intermediary positions. Right? I know of no one and no posek, right, who paskins in practice and in theory, right, like either the Rambam or the Meiri. Many people say they hold the position of the Rambam. We're going to look closely at what the position of the Rambam is and its implications. And most people who maintain that they paskin like the Rambam hold a rhetorical position like the Rambam. They do not practice and follow the implications of the Rambam's position. Except, I have to say, there was one, I saw one psak about a year ago by the chief rabbi of Tzfat. Tzfat is a fairly large tourist town. So the chief rabbi of Tzfat paskined that if you have an inn or a hotel or a bed and breakfast place in Tzfat, you're not allowed to rent a room to a Christian, because there's a prohibition against giving Ovdei Avodah Zarah temporary resting place in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he said one is not allowed even to rent a room to a Christian. So you see the implications of this position. And obviously he maintained that Christians were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Allah, the Rambam. Now, let me just kind of flesh out these two intermediary halachic categories between the Rambam and the Meiri, and then we're going to look inside and actually see some quotes from these positions. Okay, the first of these intermediary positions, I would say the one closer to the Rambam, right, maintains that none of the traditional legal prohibitions regarding Ovdei Avodah Zarah that are found in the Talmud, right, prohibitions such as doing business with Ovdei Avodah Zarah around the time of their holidays, like Christmas, okay, positions like not rescuing an oved avodah zarah from danger, like not having warm relations with oved avodah zarah. The first of these intermediary categories maintains that none of these traditional legal halachic prohibitions regarding Jewish contact with adherents of avodah zarah apply to contact with Christians. This position, that Jewish law does not consider Christians to be worshippers of avodah zarah, is held by Rav Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, and virtually all the great rabbinic authorities living in Christian societies, including Rashi, the Rush, and the Ramah. Now, it's very important to be careful about this position. These authorities left open the possibility, however, that while Christians themselves were not Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Christianity might still be Ovdei Avodah Zarah and forbidden for Gentiles. And they most certainly believed, without any question whatsoever, that Christianity was wrong for Jews, to the extent that it was incumbent upon Jews to die rather than to accept the tenets of Christianity. Now, the second of these positions, so I would say that this position says that Christians are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah, despite the fact that Christianity may be Avodah Zarah, or is Avodah Zarah. The second of these positions maintains that Christians are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah, because Christianity, as a system of belief and worship, is not Avodah Zarah for Gentiles. Okay? So it's a statement not only about the halachic status of Christians, but it's the statement about the halachic status of Christianity for non-Jews. In fact, while Christianity is not pure monotheism, it does represent a valid positive form, and it worships the same creator of heaven and earth that Judaism requires Jews to worship. This distinction between one of Avodah Zarah for Jews and another of Gentiles is really based on the second of the Aseret HaDibrot. What is the language there? Lo yehi elecha Elohim acherim. Right. There shall not be for you other gods. So there's discussion why. What is the significance of the term lecha? Lecha rules out the permissibility of other god for Jews, but not for Gentiles. And this makes perfect logical sense, because prior to Aseret HaDibrot, we already knew that Avodah Zarah was prohibited. That's based upon Sheva Mitzvah V'nei Noach back in Bereshit. So the exclusion of other god forms, right, or the insistence on pure monotheism, is a halachic requirement only for Jews, but not for Gentiles. Now, in addition to the Meiri that I just discussed, right, this position was held by such medieval authorities as the Rabbeinu Tam, according to most Achronim, at least, right, the Be'er HaGola, Rav Moses Rifkus, in the 17th century Lithuania, Rav Yaakov Emden in 18th century Germany, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch in 19th century Germany, Rav David Zvi Hoffman also in 19th century, and a number of authorities in the 20th century. Now let's look at some of these sources closely so you can see why I laid out these four categories as I did. Do you have a copies of the sources on the table? Everybody have them? Some of them are in Hebrew, some of them are in English. So first let's take a look at some of the writings from the Rambam. Okay, the Rambam is most explicit in his Perush HaMishnayos on Masechet Avodah Zarah, his commentary on the Mishnah, on the tractate that deals with Avodah Zarah. And for the Rambam, Christians were identical to the ancient pagan idolaters of the time of the Gemara. Pure and simple. Right. Here's what he says. Know that this Christian nation who advocate the messianic claims in all of their various sects, all of them are Obdei Avodah Zarah. I'm not so sure that Obdei Avodah Zarah is best translated as idolaters, and I'll explain why in a moment. Right? But here's what the Rambam says. On their festivals, right, it is forbidden for us to deal with them, because the Mishnah says that 3 days before an idolatrous festival, Jews are prohibited from doing business with these idolaters. Right? And that applies to Christians, according to the Rambam. And all Torah restrictions pertaining to idolaters pertain to them. It is forbidden to deal with these believers on Sunday at all, in any manner whatsoever. Rather, we deal with them as we would deal with any idolaters on their festivals. One must know that any of the cities of the Christian nation that has a place of worship, in other words, a church, which is without doubt a house of idolatry, through that city one must not intentionally pass, let alone dwell. Right, so according to the Rambam, at least L'chatchila, initially, none of us should be living in Toronto, because I assume there's a church in Toronto. Correct? None of us should be doing business with Christians, not only today, but even 3 days prior to Christmas and Easter and Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 3 days prior to the Christian Sabbath. Right, so you can see the Rambam's, this is why I say that one can rhetorically paskin like the Rambam, but in practice, right, I don't know anybody who actually functions this way. Let's take a look at what he says in Hilchot Avodah Zarah. It's a positive commandment to destroy all idolatry and its objects and everything done for it. Later on, he says, in the land of Israel, it is imperative to pursue it until it is removed from the entire land. Outside of the land of Israel, we're not obligated to pursue it. It's not an imperative to destroy it, but every place in which it is vanquished, we destroy it. So according to the Rambam, there's an obligation, a halachic obligation, to evict Christianity from the land of Israel. Destroy every church, make sure that nobody practices Christianity in the land of Israel. Now this, again, is the l'chatchila position. The Rambam's a realist and understands that only in perfect political conditions could we actually pursue this policy. Right? But that is clearly the ideal. That's the principle and the ideal. Now let's look at the last one from Hilchot Malachim. Moses, our teacher, was commanded by God to coerce, lakof, call everyone all who come into the world to accept the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach. And anyone who does not accept them shall be, or one could read, may be, put to death. Yehareg. Mishalo Yekabel, Mikabel, Yehareg. Right. Anyone who does not accept the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach loses his right to life in this world. Now, because Christianity is a Avodah Zarah for the Rambam, Christians would fit into this category. Right. So literally what the Rambam is saying is that halachic Jews, and I know this sounds extreme and harsh, but this is the position of the Rambam, halachic Jews are obligated to force Christians out of being Christians, to convert out of Christianity, not necessarily to Judaism, but it's an illicit form of worship that Jews cannot tolerate, and if we can't convert them out of it, certainly in the land of Israel we need to expel them, and if we can't expel them, it would even be permissible, right, for them to be killed. Yehareg. Now, I'm not advocating this as policy. I don't think the Rambam in practice would advocate this as policy, but this is the position in principle of the Rambam. That's why I say that I know of nobody who actually practices according to the Shita of the Rambam. Now, let's take a look at the second position, and that's the position where Christians are not in the category of Obdei Avodah Zarah, but Christianity might be. Now, how can this be so? Right. It's based on a statement in the Gemara in Chulin, right, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that Nachrim outside of the land of Israel, right, are not Obdei Avodah Zarah because Minhag Avotehem B'Yadehem. Right. They participate in a religion that is avodah zarah, but they are not ovdei avodah zarah because, in fact, they're doing it out of a sense of tradition, and they are accepting the practices of their ancestors. The implication is they really don't believe in the fundamental principles of the religion. Hence, you can have a situation where Christians are not ovdei avodah zarah lufi halacha, but Christianity is because of the notion of Trinity. So I just excerpted some of the statements that indicate this. The first is of the Ramah, and just look at the italicized sentence at the end. Ubizman hazeh, in this time, ha'umot lav ovdei avodat kochavim hem. Gentiles, the Gentile nations, are not in the halachic category of ovdei kochavim. Right, and therefore, the prohibitions regarding Gentiles touching wine, right, do not apply to Christians the same way they applied to the Gentiles in the time of the Gemara. Right? Another statement of the Ramah later on: "Bizman hazeh de'ein ovdei kochavim menachshkim shari." So that if Gentiles touch Jewish wine, kosher wine, right, we consider it to be unintentional, right, and therefore the wine still is permissible, right, and the statement of the Shach, he's talking about Yishma'alim, i.e., Muslims. He says, "V'lav ovdei avodat kochavim hem." They're not idolaters. But who had din l'shar ovdei kochavim b'zman hazeh, right? And it's true with the majority of Gentiles today, right? They're not in this category, this Talmudic category of ovdei kochavim.
Interrupt for a minute. We have two cars blocking access. A Ford AHWL009, if it could be moved across the road, and a Toyota AZMT831. Those cars can be moved. Thank you very much.
Okay, so that is the position of one set of halachic authorities, that Christians, for technical reasons whatsoever, are not in the category of avodah zarah, but Christianity is. Right? Christianity is an illicit, improper form of worship. The second of these intermediary categories, right, is represented by the Rabbeinu Tam, right? According to most interpreters of Rabbeinu Tam. Here's what Rabbeinu Tam says in a famous Tosfot in Masechet Sanhedrin. Right? The context is whether Jews are allowed to enter into business partnership with non-Jews. The halachic issue is that in the course of this business partnership, the non-Jew may be forced to take an oath to swear in the name of his God. Right? And there's a prohibition on Jews against somehow being an agent in causing a non-Jew to swear in the name of avodah zarah. So then the question is, if Christianity is avodah zarah, if Jews go into business with Christians may come to the situation of having to take an oath in the name of the Christian God, and is that, and if it's avodah zarah, that's prohibited for Jews. So here's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. In this age, they all swear by their saints, and it's clear he's talking about Christians, to whom they do not ascribe divinity. Although they mention the name of God along with them, the intention, when they have God in mind, right, their intention and their intent is for something else. Nevertheless, for Christians, this is not avodah zarah, right? And their awareness is of borei shamayim va'aretz. Even though they associate the name of God with something else, i.e., Jesus, we do not find that it is forbidden to cause indirectly others to perform such associationism. Right? This is shituf. Right? This is in halachic parlance, this is shituf, associating something else, right, with the true God of the universe. And we do not put a stumbling block before the blind, because Gentiles are not prohibited from doing this. Now, the plain reading of the Rabbeinu Tam is that he is saying that shituf and the worship of a religion which includes shituf, i.e. the Trinity, is not forbidden for Gentiles. It's forbidden for Jews, but not for Gentiles. Okay. That's the way most Achronim understand this Tosfot. So according to the Rabbeinu Tam, Christians worshiping a Trinitarian God are doing nothing wrong. It's perfectly mutter for Christians. It's perfectly permissible and licit for Christians to act this way. There is a minority reading that some Achronim take of this Tosfot, and Dr. Berger has explained it very eloquently in the appendix of one of his books, that says that what the Rabbeinu Tam is saying is not that the worship is permitted for Christians, but rather the taking of the oath is forbidden for Christians. But the majority of Achronim interpret the Rabbeinu Tam as saying that pure monotheism is only a requirement for Jews, not for Christians. And therefore, Christians who believe in a Trinity are doing nothing wrong. It's a perfectly valid religious form for Christians. The next source is the Be'er HaGolah, right? And I'll just read from the second line. Elu HaGoyim, Asher Anachnu Yisraelim, Chosim B'Tzel Shelehem, those Goyim in whose shadow we live today, Umufuzarim B'Nehem, and were scattered amongst them, Heim Ma'aminim B'Chidush HaOlam, they believe in the creation of the universe, Ubiyitziat Mitzrayim, and the exodus of the Jews from Egypt, Ubiikre Hadat, right, and the basic principles of Jewish belief, right, V'chol Kavanotam Lasot Shemayim V'aretz, right, and their intention when they talk about God is to talk about the Borei Shemayim V'aretz, the same Borei Shemayim V'aretz that Jews acknowledge. Kamo Shekatu Haposkim Lo Dai She'ein Asur Lahatzilan. And it's goes without saying, right, that it's not prohibited from saving them, right, because according to the Talmud, according to the Rambam, right, if someone is an idolater, it's prohibited to save him. The Rambam paskins in Hilchot Tshuva that if you're a doctor, it's forbidden to treat a Christian to save his life. Certainly for nothing. It's forbidden to do it for nothing. And if you have to, you can take money to do it, right? Because Avodah Zarah is a negative phenomenon in the world. You should try to get rid of it. And therefore, you should try to get rid of Avodah Zarah. So here, the Be'er HaGolah is saying none of this applies to Christians. Not only is it not forbidden to save them, but we should pray, right, for their welfare because they're a positive phenomenon. They attest to the creation of the world, to Yetziat Mitzrayim, right, to the Nevi'im, to these fundamental principles. Rav Yaakov Emden has a similar position. Just let me read you a quote from Rav Yaakov Emden that is not in your sources. Here's what he says. The Christians have eradicated Avodah Zarah and removed idols and obligated themselves in the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach so that they would not behave like animals of the field and instilled them firmly with moral traits. Christians and Muslims are congregations that work for the sake of heaven. They are people who are destined to endure, whose intent is l'shem shamayim, and whose reward will not be denied. So this is the second category of halakhic authorities. Rav Hirsch is in that category, who say, again, that Christianity is a positive religious form for Gentiles, right, even though it is forbidden for Jews. Shituf is permitted for Gentiles, but forbidden for Jews. The last position is the position of the Meiri, which is somewhat different. And here's why I say that I know of nobody who follows from start to finish the position of the Meiri. The Meiri differed in one respect from this latter, from this last group of poskim, right, because he maintained that not only is Christianity, right, not Avodah Zarah for Christians, it's not even Avodah Zarah for Jews. Now, this is a very difficult position to understand. I don't know anybody else, any other halakhic authority who even countenances such a possibility, but in fact, that's what he says. Look at the last quote from the Meiri. Right, it's from his commentary on Masechet Horiot. Where should we begin? The fourth line from the bottom. He's talking about a Jew who converts to Christianity. For he has become a Jew who becomes an apikoros. He becomes a heretic as is one who has no religion. But one who has completely left the category of Israel and has become a member of another religion, and it's clear that the Meiri here is talking about Christianity, is considered by us to be the same as any other member of the religion he has joined. Right? And therefore, he's not in the halachic category of a heretic or an apikoros. Right? Now, again, this is not a normative position, but it is the position of the Meiri. It's very difficult to understand. But the Meiri, that's why I say the Meiri is on an extreme that really is not normative. So, where are we here? We have these four positions, right? We have the extreme of the Rambam, which says that Christianity and Christians are illicit phenomenon. We have the position of the Meiri, which says that Christianity and Christians are permitted phenomenon, not only for Gentiles, but even for Jews, right? It's not heresy for Jews. And we have the two intermediary positions. Now, there's an interesting philosophical implication, right, to this third category that I talked about, that shituf, or associationism, right, or non-pure monotheism, is not a avodah zarah for Christians or Gentiles, but it is for Jews. So what this says is there's a different standard for avodah zarah for Christians than there is for Jews. And philosophically or logically, the implication is then that what the halacha category of avodah zarah, impermissible religion, forbidden religion, right, is not a statement about a metaphysical claim. It's not a statement about the nature of God. It's not a statement about what you have to, about what God is in some ultimate sense. Because if that were the case, it would be the same criterion for both Jews and non-Jews. We say that this table is round. Here's an example. This table is round. It can't be round for me and square for you. It's either round for everybody or not round for everybody. That's what we mean when we describe something in the universe. Right? So how could the halacha say that God is pure unity for Jews and non-pure unity for Christians? It doesn't make sense in a philosophical sense. And therefore, what the halacha is really doing is setting standards for behavior, for permissible behavior. And standards, those standards can vary between Jews and non-Jews. Okay? And that's actually closer to the term, to the meaning of the term avodah zarah. Avodah zarah does not mean idolatry literally, although often it connotes idolatry, but it means alien worship, impermissible worship, foreign worship. Right? And the standards are different for Jews than they are for non-Jews. Now, if this is the case, it means that the halakha is not taking a theological position per se, or a philosophical position per se. It's merely prescribing different standards of behavior for Jews and non-Jews. And the implication then is that you could have a number of different theological positions or philosophical positions about God that would all be consistent with the halakha. It's not that there's one truth and one truth only for everybody. And that's very important in terms of kind of greater appreciation of religions other than Judaism. Now, where does this leave us? It leaves us with a whole gamut of possibilities. One can poskin like the second position, namely that Christianity is an illicit position. It's a negative theology. It's something that's bad theology or wrong, but yet Christians are not subject to all of these prohibitions. Or one could adopt the position that Christianity is actually some positive theological force, as it was for Rabbi Yaakov Emden and for the Baragola and for Shimshon Raphael Hirsch and for Rav Kook, that Christianity was actually something very positive for Gentiles. We have this whole halachic gamut, so to speak. And therefore, because we have these different halachic possibilities, right, it seems to me, right, that one adopts either a negative position regarding Christianity or a positive position regarding Christianity. based upon non-halachic considerations, because you have the halacha allows you to consider either. Therefore, what I find is that most Jews adopt either a negative position about Christianity for Christians or a positive position based upon certain historical considerations, because we've had a very, very painful and difficult history with Christians and Christian persecution of Jews. And it's very difficult to get over that pain and suffering and negative experience with Christians. And therefore, we don't want to look upon Christianity as something positive. That's a historical consideration. There's a sociological consideration. There are legitimate, very, very legitimate concerns about Jews becoming too comfortable and too close with Christians, because that leads to assimilation and a breakdown of Jewish belief and Jewish practice. That's a sociological consideration. It's not the theological or the halachic consideration, right, that the poskim were dealing with primarily. Let me point out one thing about the Rambam's position, and I'm sorry I didn't point that out before. His very harsh negative intolerance toward Christians has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It's rooted in what Christians believe about their God. It's not rooted in how Christians behave toward Jews. And therefore, for the Rambam, in principle, he would be as intolerant of Raoul Waldenberg, who saved many, many Jews during the Shoah, as he would be of Torquemada or any Christian who persecuted Jews. It's not based upon an assumption of anti-Semitic behavior of Christians. It's based upon the nature of the belief. So we have these different possibilities. The Jews who wish to preserve or recreate pre-emancipation social conditions and isolate themselves from positive relations with Christians can find refuge in the halachic attitude of the Rambam and his followers. But after you clear through the thicket of halachic obstacles, right, Jews who have been touched by modernity, who value openness to Western culture, and who value dignified relations with Christians, and who want to somehow find a positive appreciation of both Christians and Christianity, can also find ample basis and precedent in the halacha for their aspirations. Now, of course, safeguarding future Jewish identity limits complete and full interaction with Christians, right? Because without such limits in an open pluralistic society, right, assimilation is guaranteed. Right? But assuming that the proper social limits can be set, right, then the question really becomes, is Christianity and are Christians still the physical and spiritual enemy of Jews and Judaism, right, that it always has been traditionally? Right? In which case, any kind of reconciliation with Christianity, right, will threaten and imperil Jewish life. In other words, is contemporary Christianity, you know, really different from its historical antecedents the way it was in the past as it relates to Jews and Judaism? Now, much has happened to Christianity about Jews and Judaism since the Shoah to suggest that it has changed. And we'll, in fact, talk a lot about that this afternoon. And I assume that Dr. Berger is going to talk about that later this morning. But if it has changed, right, and if Christianity is no longer a physical and spiritual threat to Judaism, right, the possibility of new Christian-Jewish relations takes on particular significance. And we'll talk more about this, right, in the future. Now, one last point, and then I'll finish. Even the Rambam, again, the Rambam, who was the harshest critic of Christianity as a religion, as a theology, right, had to accord to Christianity some positive role in history. And it was very hard for him logically to do this. Here's what the Rambam says almost at the very end of the Mishneh Torah. There's no human power that can comprehend the designs of the Creator of the universe. And thus, the words of Jesus and of the Ishmaelite, that is, Muhammad, were only to prepare the way for the Mashiach. and to repair the whole world. L'takein et ha'olam. To serve the Lord in unison. Now, this is very difficult to understand. What the Rambam is saying here, which is against all of his logic, if he considers Christianity a avodah zarah, is that Christianity has in fact done something very good in the world. Right? It has somehow spread this idea of Yemot HaMashiach, the idea of a Messiah, right? And to some extent civilized the Goyim. Right? Now this should not be for the Rambam. And that's why the Rambam starts out this halacha by saying there is no human power that can comprehend the designs of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because if it's a avodah zarah, and a avodah zarah is kind of the prototype of evil that needs to be destroyed in the world, you know, there should be no positive dimension of Christianity. And yet, even the Rambam concedes that Christianity has done some good in the world. Now, and also note that for the Rambam, even though Christians and Jews have different faiths, Christianity plays some role in the realization of the Jewish Brit, of our Torah. Because even Christianity, in some inscrutable way, is bringing the world closer to Yemot HaMashiach. Now, if this is the case, even for the Rambam, that Judaism and Christianity, right, are both somehow working toward this notion of an ideal world in Yemot HaMashiach, then Jews and Christians have a kind of common task to make the world a better place, and to make the God of creation, our God, the Borei Shemayim Va'aretz, right, known to all humanity. If that's the case, then both of us, right, Christians and Jews, can see each other as bringing the world closer to this ideal religious goal. Right? And to bring religious history, right, to fruition. And if that's so, then there is indeed a possibility for a positive appreciation, not only for Christians as kind of secular human beings out there, right, but even for the faith in which they believe. Thank you. We'll take some questions.
We want to thank Dr. Korn for his presentation. We're going to have some question period now. I will come around with the mic and take people's questions. I just wanted to ask myself. I have a lot of students who are thoroughly immersed in Western/secular culture. And a practical question arises, especially given the Shita of the Meiri and certain offshoots, about Jewish kids participating in quote-unquote innocuous Christian rituals, such as everything from attending Christmas dinner to even going to church and seeing Mass and so forth. How would Rishonim and Poskim look at that if they have the view that Christianity is not sort of illicit for Jews?
Right. Okay, well, first of all, I would say what I tried to do this morning was to stake out some basic principles of the positions. For any specific question, you know, I would urge you, I would demand of you, you have to go to a Rav. Don't make implications from what I said. Any specific question like the one that was asked, you really need to ask a Shaila. This is a tension. Right. Even the Meiri, it's interesting, even the Meiri, who said that all of the distinctions between Jews and Goyim with respect to monetary affairs, let's say, all of the discriminatory halacha that you find in the Gemara in monetary affairs with respect to Ovdei Avodah Zarah, don't apply to Christians. Christians and Jews are absolutely identical in terms of economic rights and economic relations. Right. Even the Meiri, right, couldn't follow that consistently, because he understood that if he could carried it out consistently, there was a huge danger, right, in Jews and Christians becoming so close socially that Jews would ultimately, I think, assimilate out or convert out into Christianity. He was afraid, but legitimately so. And we should be concerned. you know, of getting too close to Christians, because that just leads to Jews leaving the faith. So I would say there's a position in principle, and then there's the practical issues that you have to deal with on a case by case basis. I'll tell you what I do. Okay, I'm very involved in relations with Christians, dialogue with Christians, religious dialogue with Christians, trying to help Christians understand Jews better and Jews understand Christians better. I never go to any form of Christian worship. You know, I would never ever go to a Catholic mass. Okay, first of all, I think it's an insult to Catholicism, and it's certainly a violation of what I believe. Right, I did not want to participate in Christian worship because that implies that I believe in whatever the structure is. I do not. Okay, I think that's a very legitimate consideration. I would go into a church if there's no worship going on in the church. But I would not in any way, shape, or form participate in any form of Christian worship. And I don't think any form of Christian worship is innocuous, by the way. You know, it's not innocuous because if you take it seriously, you know, you become a witness to what is taking place there. And Jews are not witnesses to what is taking place there. If you want to have a Thanksgiving dinner, you know, this is in vogue in the United States. Sometimes they have a Thanksgiving dinner because it's quote unquote innocuous. There's no theological overtones. And you want to say psalms together. You know, that is certainly not in the category of a mass, so to speak. That might be considered innocuous. I think you have to be very, very careful, particularly because there's so much of a social push, you know, to eliminate the barriers between Jews and Christians. We should understand each other, but we should also understand that there are differences that cannot be bridged and should not be bridged. So I hope that helps a bit. Yes. Yeah, why don't you?
You talked about the historical and sociological factors that might influence where we position ourselves on the spectrum of four positions. You didn't talk about the political factor, which particularly in your country is very important right now, and that the biggest Zionists in the world today, bigger than us, are evangelical Christians, the most likely to want to convert us, but also the ones who support your current administration's very pro-Israel position. And how that should impact.
That sounds like a lecha, meaning me and not you.
Right? Well, it's less of a factor in our politics. So.
Right. Well, I did want to talk a bit more about that this afternoon. Right. Again, that's not a theological issue. That's the issue of what kind of alliances are in our political interests. Okay. Now, the fact is that it's a very difficult position to work out with respect to evangelicals. And I think that's what you're referring to, right? Because on the one hand, they are the most active supporters of Israel, both on a political and an economic level amongst Goyim. Right? So, and Israel needs all the friends it can get. Jews need all the friends they can get. So on that level, you know, clearly they are our political allies in most cases regarding Israel. But on the other hand, there's the traditional notion that they're really their end game, right? What they're really after is to convert us. So if Jews are not nervous enough or anxious enough about life, you know, this is a very difficult position to sort out. I would just say, by way of explanation, that there's been a lot of surveys taken in the evangelical community, right, about why do you support Israel? Various reasons. And the most popular reason for supporting Israel amongst evangelicals is that they see Israel as a Western democracy fighting the same enemies that America fights, terrorists, enemies of freedom, et cetera, not for religious reasons. The second most popular reason is that they believe they take the Chumash very seriously. You know, and in that we should appreciate them in some respects. It's like, you know, I teach at Seton Hall University. It's a good Orthodox Catholic university. Okay, one of the reasons I like to teach there is they understand my religious commitments. They understand when I open up the Bible, the Chumash, right, and I see something that's very disturbing, I just can't erase it because it, you know, it disturbs me. Right? So I say that we both come to the scripture with pencils but no erasers. We make a lot of comments in the margins, but we're not free just to throw out a pusik because it disturbs us. And the evangelicals are similar. They tend to have a much more literal reading, but they take very seriously what the Kadosh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu in Bereshit Yud Bet. It says, those who bless you will be blessed, those who curse you will be cursed. So they do it for self-interested reasons. They think if they help the Jewish people, God will bless them, right? Not for conversionary purposes. The issue of converting Jews is way down on the list. That's what the surveys indicate. So it's a difficult political call. This is a political call. I don't think it's a theological judgment that we have to make.
You mentioned that it's okay to have a business partner, Christian. And you also say that you're willing to go to church and no services. What happens?
I go into a church.
You will go in. What happens when your business partner dies and the funeral is held in a Catholic church?
Well, if it's a mass, again, I think, you know, you can explain this position that you did not take part in any kind of a religious service, so to speak, in which, you know, you're testifying to the truth of the religion. There are ways. Look, I find that there's no substitute for basic humanity and openness. If you tell people on a very principled level, right, that you do not participate in Christian worship or services, they understand that, you know. But then you demonstrate in other ways that you have enormous respect and concern and feeling, and you want to pay last respects to your partner, to your whatever it is. They understand that distinction. They really do. Religious people understand that. But it can't be an excuse for just cutting off, you know, all kinds of respectful relations with Christians. So people understand that distinction because it's made out of principle. I've never had a problem with that.
Yes, there's an issur in the Torah, lo sechonim, and this is observed in ultra-Orthodox Judaism, and it's been written up also in a modern Orthodox journal, Techumim. The issur means you're not allowed to do a favor to a goy without getting something in return. So the assumption is because the goy is oved avoid the zora. So we see that it's widespread in Orthodox Judaism, the idea today that a goy is oved avoid the zora, that he's an idolater. So, we still consider a goy as an idolater if we assume there's an issue of lo sechonim.
Okay. What I tried to show you this morning is that there are different positions amongst halakhic authorities regarding the status of a non-Jew and specifically a Christian. Okay. There's popular attitude. Right? A guy, because he's a guy, a non-Jew is automatically an Oved Avodah Zarah. Right? There is that attitude. What I tried to show you is that the halakha is much more discreet. It separates the goyish world into those who are worship negatively, right, and should be regarded negatively, and those who are regarded positively, to whom we have certain basic moral obligations. Okay, the halakha doesn't treat all goyim under the same category. Now, I think you're alluding to the fact that because of our difficult history, with Christians specifically, for 1900 years, the greatest enemy of our people was the Roman Catholic Church and Orthodox Protestantism after that. So we've had a very, very difficult history with them, very painful history. The scars are still on our bodies. And hence, because of that history and because of our memory, we have negative attitudes toward them. The question really is, for us, as self-interested Jews, and as people who are interested in religious issues, right, is it in the interests of the Jewish people, both politically and spiritually, right, to carry, to preserve this attitude of the past, or is the 21st century different? Are there challenges different? Is there a reason to try to stake out positions of new relationships with Christians or Goyim, right, if the halakha allows it? That's the issue. Now, the lo techanim thing, first of all, the majority of poskim say lo techanim doesn't refer to Goyim per se, only to idolaters. Right? And then we get into the issue whether Christianity constitutes a avodah zarah or doesn't constitute a avodah zarah. I quoted to you the psak of the rabbi of Tzfat, right, who said that you're not allowed to. That's also lo techanim, because lo techanim means you shouldn't allow a resting place to Goyim. I don't know if there's a church in Tzfat. If there is, then the chief rabbi should move out of Tzfat. What I'm pointing to you is that there's a certain inconsistency here. Yes. I'm sorry.
Going back to what you said about not participating in a service, and the gentleman mentioned if your partner was a non-Jew and he passed away, do you go to the funeral? I hate to contradict you, sir, because you can go. You can stay at the back. I mean, I've been at a conservative synagogue when an ultra-Orthodox couple came in. They just stayed at the back because and they didn't participate. But it was a family affair, and they went. But, I mean, I myself have gone. I haven't participated, but I went out of respect for the person that passed away. And I feel, too, that within ourselves... Excuse me. Because I'm very perturbed about what I've heard today. Because what I've heard today, we amongst ourselves can be our own worst enemies, because with the Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform, one doesn't want to go into the other. So can you explain this? I mean, how can we come together with our non-Jewish people and try to affect the peace process even? Because some of the things I've heard today, where you said that in Tzfat they wouldn't a non-Jew can't rent a room to a Jew can't rent a room to a non-Jew. How does he make a living?
Okay. Well, first of all, maybe Torah Moshe will have another day, you know, to talk about internal Jewish rifts. I can't get into the issue of Orthodox, Conservative, right? Okay. I think that's... let me just say this. Internal Jewish rifts is a great tragedy for Am Yisrael. This idea that somehow Orthodox Jews should have nothing to do with heterodox Jews, I think is a deep, deep tragedy for Am Yisrael. It's a situation we have to overcome in a certain way with integrity, so we can safeguard our beliefs, but yet still feel that we're all part of Am Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael, that we have love for each other. So the present situation internally, I think, is a lamentable one, right? That is different from the situation of relations between serious halachic Jews and non-Jews. It's a whole different discussion. It revolves around different considerations. There are ways we can, and I would say we should, show respect for Gentiles, right? Religious, qua religious Gentiles, right? Priests, nuns. I work with these people. Some of them are the finest people that I've ever met. Right? They're walking Tzelem Elokims. That's the way I would put it. Not all of them, but many of them. Right? We need to show deep respect, not only from a humanitarian point of view, but from a religious point of view. And yet, we need to maintain the distinction, right, between them believing in Christianity, right, and us believing in Judaism, which precludes Jews from participating, you know, in activities, symbolic activities, which somehow would indicate that Jews believe what Christians believe. That's a difficult issue. It's a difficult line to follow, but I believe it's a line that we must follow.
We're going to have one more, and people can speak to Dr. Korn privately after that.
You started off your discussion saying that the Gemara doesn't talk about Christians, but you also said that...
Jewish Christians, but Gentile Christians.
Okay. Well, then maybe my question's not valid, but if Minim are Christians, then the Gemara talks about Christians a lot.
No, but Minim, as I said before, Minim were Jews who went astray, Jews who went into heretical forms. That was my point. Minim refers to Jews who have become apikorsim in a way, not to Gentiles who have different forms of worship.
Yeah, if the worship is the same and the ideas are the same, it's hard to understand why halachically there'd be a difference. And just to follow up with that, if the halacha seems to be so malleable in terms of sort of going through these stages, different countries, what would we do if we lived in India with Hindus? If we have Aboriginal friends who might be real pagans, do we go into their stores? Is the halacha just going to accommodate any type of situation where Jews find themselves?
I don't think the halacha is malleable so that there are no limits. In other words, you just can't say anything and say it's a halachic position. I was talking very specifically about how the halacha regarded Christianity. There's a variety of views, right? The halakha hasn't really dealt seriously with Oriental religions yet. I think ultimately we'll have to, but it hasn't done it yet. What I was trying to do was to give you the sources and the authoritative opinions of rabbis who have considered the issue of both the status of Christians and the status of Christianity per se. The one case in the Gemara where it does refer to Gentile Christians, right? There's a position of Rabbi Yishmael which says that you can never do business with Christians. Not any day of the week. Forget about Sunday. Not any day of the week. It says, Li'olam notzri asur. Right? And it's because you can't do business with them 3 days before their holiday and 3 days after their holiday. So if Sunday is their holiday, you can't do business with them 3 days before, 3 days after. So what does the Me'iri do with that? The Me'iri says that text is not talking about Christians. It should be in one of your, in one of the quotes. It's not talking about Christians. It's talking about sun worshippers who are followers of Nebuchadnezzar, Notzri, right? That's not a normative reading, I would say. But well, yeah, that's a very. But I would just say that even if you reject the Me'iri's reading. Even if you reject the Me'iri's reading as really not what the Gemara is saying, that's one opinion in the Gemara. It does not necessarily mean it's the determinative opinion in the Gemara. Clearly, for Rabbi Yaakov Emden, for the Baragulla, for the Shach, for the greats, many, many of the greats of Halakha, right? That wasn't normative.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll continue. Dr. Korn, of course, is speaking again at 2:30.